Sneum's Palace on the lake.
The lake.
The lake radio.
And with this funny little sound, the doors has been opened into Sneum's Palace. And inside to have the palace manager, it's me, Jan Sneum. And also I have two guests in this very small and very warm The Lake studio in the center of Copenhagen. And the guests are Danish singer and songwriter Kira Skov and Estonian-born musician, composer, conductor Maria Faust. And welcome to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this thing about Estonian born, I just use that phrase because you are in fact living in Denmark and you have been here for quite a long time. But the Estonian element is essential in what we are going to talk about in the next hour, because we're going to talk about a very interesting collaboration between the two of you. Going to Estonia, going to the southeastern part, and record a full album of new material in an abandoned church outside in the countryside. Now the album has been released. It's called In the Beginning, and you can see and learn a lot about the process on the internet. It has been so well documented in photos and video. But in this program, this version of Sneum's Palace, we're going to talk, we're going into the making of the album, and also we're going to play a couple of tracks full length, because that's part of the deal at the palace. We are not fading anything. Now, Maria, I have to start with you, because we are going east. And when we met a couple of years ago, also in the palace, you had just released an album called Sacrum Facere. And it was an album where you used a lot of your knowledge and experiences from Estonia. What did you do in order to convince Kira, a Danish singer and conductor, that you had to go back and do something together with Kira?
First of all, I have to start that when I did Sacrum Facere, then was that my very first step of going into the memory layers. And that was about folklore and my surrounding, maybe also some feministic things there. But next step for me, naturally, was to go to religion and institutions, or like regimes and church, and to be honest, I don't really know when, but it pretty in a like straight in the beginning, then it was clear that it needs also vocal, of course, but it came already naturally when we spent time with Kira a lot, and just the idea started to just, you know, it got wings there when, you know, talking about lots of the same thoughts, even that we have been growing up in a very different places, but at the same time I'm under Russian regime and she, your and her parents being communists or whatever.
Yeah. I think it I was also like, brought up under the red flags.
Like how different that was, and then how different we understand. I mean, like actually not very much different at all. It's the same.
But I guess that you didn't just went to Kira because you knew that her parents were communists and you wanted to bring her back to see the damage that
the
was
damage that was done. No, I mean, I actually heard the album, the Sacrum Facere album, and I was very blown away by that record. It completely, I mean, it touched me very, very deeply, and I thought it was such a beautiful piece of work. So I was already very sort of fascinated by Maria and her abilities, which are so different to the ones that I have, you know. And so Maria actually did some arrangements for my previous album, solo album, May Your Mind Explode, A Blossom Tree. And that was very successful collaboration. And I think that was kind of the beginning of it, wasn't it? That we kind of realized, okay, there's more to be gained from this kind of mixing of, you know, of musical abilities and visions. So when you asked me to come to Estonia, I didn't really know like exactly what I was going into at all.
Yeah, so we did actually like research already, not year, but like 8 months before. We went there in February. Yeah. You know, and I showed her what does it mean, you know, to be in abandoned land, or like I didn't know how to call it abandoned land, but she saw it like there's no people. You were just like only we were like really strange situation, like almost like in a dream, like it's dark and there is no people.
Yeah, we were just driving, and I was really, you know. I had never been to a place where you just could drive for that long without seeing anybody.
But in some way, it is a new land to you also, Maria, because even though Estonia is not much bigger than Denmark, you are a coast Estonian,
yes,
coming from an island out in the Baltic Sea. But I remember when we met earlier on, you were talking about that you as a young woman went to that region, Võromaa, or whatever the region is called in Estonia, and you spent summers there. So you have a personal relation, when you were a teenager, I guess, what kind of impressions do you have from then? Was it as isolated as now Kiev describes the impression of the...
Yeah, well, first of all, when I grew up in this little island, that was closed island. That was an army district, so I couldn't actually get out for a very long time. So, and as our collaboration talks about borders, and one of the borders is that island that it was, like nobody's island. And then nobody's land there where all Russia, Latvia and Estonia are meeting. And also it became so symbolistic, you know, also now. We don't know really anymore how to call that genre we are writing or like what we did. Because it's also becomes a, you know, in no lands, no
hybrid.
Personal land basically.
Yeah.
But there are, it's just a little bit of everything but nothing really similar. So I can even hear classical notes there and, you know, like singer-songwriter, one thing, but old style, all kind of like American music is in there even. I mean, like sometimes it's just... And spending time in the southern part, it's just because I was in two aspects. One is that my family is Russian Orthodox churches, and in our island, those churches are not very well... presented, I think, and it's very much more there in the southern part where it all that kind of almost tribal life comes through. Ireland is still, there are so many, you know, from the old times already, Ireland is the place where very many nationalities are meeting. So it is never like closed. There is always like some sailor men coming and some very, very weird looking children running around. You know, and that's but in this area where we went now, and it is actually Otepe, it's place, a tiny place with more mountains or like hilly than usually. That is the place where everything has been marinating. Like it's really closed, you know. Like it's almost, I see it as a tribal, like Setuma. It's the same. We couldn't get into Setuma. We wanted to go, but you're not allowed to record or play even instrumental music because Orthodox Church doesn't allow it.
So this is actually the first time that anyone has been granted permission.
We could easily continue talking a full hour just about that region of Europe, because there are so many aspects, and you have already mentioned a couple of things, the Seto. First of all, I guess that we just need to believe in some ways that this region is the place in Europe where the Nordic and the German and the Slavic meets. And it is this conglomerate of history, of culture that makes, I'm sure, the region very interesting. And the Seto is this community. They think, talk about themselves as being a people on their own with a language.
Yes, but they have their language. Yeah. You know, there is absolutely no understanding. I don't understand what they talk. And I don't see any kind of roots there. Like, it's almost like aliens have been landing. And, you know, keep, and they keep themselves very, very kind of like separated. And they're very proud of that, of course. But it's, for me, complete like alien tribal life there. It's just like life stopped there. Almost like Amish, kind of.
Yes, to me it's so extremely interesting. And when you're talking about the Amish people, you even have a Russian minority living in the same region with the Peipsi Lake. The old believers, I still do not know the word in Estonia, but that's...
Vana-Usul, is it?
That's right. The one.
I'll keep to the old believers, I'm sorry. But in order not to make it into only a talk about history and geography and this region of Estonia, because I'm sure we will return. When you realized that you wanted to do something together, what did you do? Did you study, talk a lot, or did you just go traveling to see what could you experience when you were the two of you?
We started with the road trip, which was just like, I came to Tallinn and we met and Maria had rented a car and then we just drove and we drove for a while. And Maria had already kind of found all these old churches like that we had penciled in. Like we were going to see these, if any of them were in fit condition to actually do something. So we were looking for like some sort of a stage for the recording and to take place in, but also for the to get inspiration for the music. So it kind of fitted two purposes to look for this church in the beginning. And we came to some very, very dark and very
scary
places, actually.
Somebody has been grilling in a church ruins, like it looked like the true detective kind of, like, why it was so bad.
Let's return to that, but let's hear some music.
Yeah.
And I want to start with the very first, the opening track of In the Beginning, called Blessed Are the Women, which is a religious track with music and text by you, plus the
text is original Ave Maria.
Yeah.
The Catholic.
Yeah, exactly. I always wanted to do it, so like that's what it is.
So you're listening to The Lake, you're listening to Sneum's Palace, and it's a live broadcast, and now we're going to hear the opening track of In the Beginning, Blessed Are the Women.
Jesus, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us. Blessed are the women, blessed is the fruit of the the fruit of the womb.
You're listening to The Lake, you're listening to Sneum's Palace, and we have guests in the studio, Kira Skov and Maria Faust, and we are talking about this album, this project you did in the beginning, recorded in an abandoned church in Estonia. And when we opened the program, I got the feeling that you, Maria, already from day one wanted to do something with a set off in the Orthodox Church.
Yes, it is about the layers of like memory and collecting memory that I'm working in my music. So religion, I mean, first of all, the church is a symbol of our whole existence right now, like a Western European symbol. Everything is actually connected to somewhat like this dualism, and it has been really interesting for me to go into deep into my memory, like that my grandparents were actually extremely religious, and there's only two generations just between me and extremely religious person. So that means that they think differently. It's never their time, it's God's time. It's everything is measured by God's mercy, I would say. And of course, interesting thing and very challenging for me now, starting to work with Kira and choir, is that I never actually really worked with vocal. I don't. The texts and lyrics has been always really hard for me to understand it as the same way as Kira does, or like I just hear music differently. I don't remember the lyrics very well, but I can remember the tones very well. So yeah, it's such a big challenge for me to write for. And the other aspect that we did something together, I never did the work together. I never had the collaboration. Like I always did alone, because it was also comfortable.
And it sort of came together a little bit, like I felt like it was a little bit of a collage, piece that we kind of created, taking all the inspirations from, like there was like fragments of different parts of the Estonian history and culture. Because like I was diving into reading about Estonian myths and obviously listening to some of the old Estonian folklore, and also visiting the church, the Russian Orthodox Church. We went to mass, you know, we had to go through many steps of actually like for being approved, you know. We kind of had to sit down and eat a lot of food with a lot of different people. And
religious also, people.
Like, yeah, to be kind of like granted permission to actually use the room.
So even though the church seems to be abandoned, it's still protected by...
Yeah, it's still under like a... like a bishop is like there's a head bishop that
yes.
of the different districts,
or,
yeah.
And it still has a roof and you know something that you can lock the room.
We actually found one that was not a total ruin,
yeah,
but it's not really used for mass. Like,
but what did the room in those churches do to you? Because I mean, you have no roots in Orthodox religion,
no.
But listening to your voices and listening to the way we are talking, it seems as if just the architecture, the room, the atmosphere, they had an impact on you.
It was very, I mean, it was a great inspiration, I think. And also, I think just going to the mass in one of the other churches where...
That was a set to religion, like a wooden church.
Yeah. And it was just like listening to these, I mean, we went in there, you know, and it was like maybe -2 in the church, you know. People were like, and there was almost nobody, and the women sit on one side and the men sit on the other side. And then there was these very old women just like chanting, you know, these songs like for 1.5 hours. And I felt like I had kind of walked into like a, you know, a place where time stood still somehow. And that was kind of also an inspiration for us. This kind of we kind of had that as a little bit of a dogma for the compositions for both of us, that to use this kind of
It's a
chanting,
prayer,
like a prayer, exactly. Like a the repetitive patterns in music. We both tried to incorporate that in the way we wrote the music. So these kind of themes that kind of like seem to be like a never-ending kind of, you know, theme that could just kind of continue forever, kind of looping in a way. That was kind of one of the dogmas we had for the sounds. Yeah.
The melody that stays in the same place, but everything else is like spinning around it, which is symbolizing a prayer somewhere, like wherever you go, you take your prayer with you, but surrounding is changing, but it just stays the same.
That was present both in the Russian Orthodox kind of chants of their traditional music, but also I found that to be an element in the old folklore that I heard as well. And then we had some themes, like that there was a lot of these kind of religious kind of symbols or like symbols of life and the beginning of life that kind of was the same, like both in the old Estonian myths and in those kind of religious texts, which I found interesting to kind of play with those images in the lyrics.
And we will talk more about the lyrics later on, because we started this program by mentioning an album Maria did in 2014 or 15, Sakura, and Sacrum Facera, sorry. Yeah. But more or less the same year, Kirasko, you did an album too in the cabin, and you did it in Canada, in strange settings, and then you had a producer, Mark Howard, and he's also involved in your project. Yeah. So when and how did you contact him?
Well, it was you know, basically we knew like we were kind of entering into an impossible project somehow, you know, because we kind of wanted to record an album in a church that had no electricity, it had no running water, there was no toilets, there was nothing out there. So cold. We needed somebody who had specialized in kind of creating and building studios in strange locations, and that's kind of been his, you know, hobby, you could say, or like his passion since the beginning of his career, where he started working with Daniel Lanois, and he's been his kind of, you know, closest collaborator throughout Lanois's whole career.
So and his trademark is, as you were saying, doing things in odd spaces.
So I kind of thought, okay, he would be the perfect man to kind of bring on to the project. So I didn't really know anybody else that I thought could do it.
So you were just in the church with your mobile and giving the producer a call? Or
I actually think I might have written him at first. Okay. Yeah, we sent him some photos. I think we kind of like I started sending him a lot of photos from down there and just kind of like started sending all those kind of, we were very excited. We didn't really know what we were going to do, but we knew that something was happening. So we kind of just let him in to that kind of energy early on, you know, and then he was kind of on board straight away, and I guess this was like, yeah, like you said, maybe 8 or 9 months before we actually did the recording. So
it's not like the most easiest thing to take somebody from LA in with like, what was it, more than 60 kilos of gear. Yeah,
it was more,
and super expensive. So everything about that project was impossible, like from the start already.
We also had to raise, you know, obviously a lot of money.
Yes, that was what I also have to ask you, because you started pretty early doing crowdfunding.
We did crowdfunding,
But because it must have cost a fortune.
Yes. And also because, you know, again, like how do you record in a place that has no electricity? You have to get a generator bus like you do on
movie
productions.
Bus, you know.
And it can't be like one of those generators that makes any noise because it's used for like audio recording. Mm-hmm. So you had to get like an expensive silent generator bus that could power everything that went on in there. Plus,
we needed a crew. We needed a lighting crew who's just like, because the light came in, you know, outside.
Well, that was the virtual reality part of the project, which was, it was documented with virtual reality cameras. So we also needed
I've seen it. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, so you can kind of scroll 36 degrees around in a room. Yeah. But looking at a map, you know, the church is mentioned in the booklet.
Yeah.
If you look at the map, you are somewhere in the middle of nowhere in between Varu and Viljandi. Maybe the two biggest cities in the region. But Viljandi is a city with a lot of music and theater. So were you able to collaborate with people there?
No, it's too far away from that place. We took people, either they were locals or from Tallinn, and
which
singers.
Which is even further away.
Yeah, but it is easier to find people. And we needed also like very professional choir, and we didn't have any rehearsals. That's kind of my way to work. Never rehearsals.
That could
you have to read it straight away, and we start. That's where it starts. Then. So the choir needed to be uber professional. Musicians never seen. Even Kira didn't see the music before. So I entered into the
call. I never heard the arrangements because I don't read. You know, I wrote whatever parts of the music that I wrote and the lyrics, but I had never actually heard the arrangements until we stood in the church, which was a beautiful experience because it requires a lot of trust as well, you know, that you kind of let it, you know, surrender something.
Well, it's just music wasn't either ready before.
In many ways, I think it's kind of a miracle. Maybe it has something to do with someone looking down on you that this project came to a reality.
Yeah,
it should have been released in the early spring, but then a sad tragedy happened, and your bass player and celloist suddenly died very unexpectedly, and of course it had meant something to the work. And for me, being an outsider, it has been difficult not listening to the album afterwards without having this knowledge. Mm. And suddenly you hear songs in a different way.
Yeah.
But in our talk, I think we should stick to what was the original meaning. Because, of course, if it's an art piece, you as a listener or as a receiver, you can interpretate things that you like.
Yeah.
So,
but I don't think you're the only one. I mean, I felt the same way, you know, about the music after the fact, that there was something weird about there was this destiny kind of written in the, well, this kind of, I don't know.
Besides that chant thing that was repeating the theme or like this dogma is, we had two other words that we put. One was forgiveness. So we put something. We were working on philosophical idea of what does it mean for us to forgive for the whole humankind, everything. And I mean, it sounds cheesy, but it's not as easy as you think. Like to forgive, actually, nations forgiving to the regimes. Like how do Estonia ever forgive to Russia? How do we actually forgive to church that has been doing so many bad things and at the same time becoming almost like a paradox in that is both good and bad? Mm. You know, all those things. So after, it's for me or to anybody very hard to understand what exactly we did. Why did we do it, actually? Because
it's a strange thing, I think, with music and art in that way, because it's not the first time it's happened in my life, but obviously this has been a very profoundly, if it's a coincidence, it's a strange one. But I have experienced this before, that I've been writing about something and then I didn't really understand. That's also the part of the process of, I think, creating stuff, is that in order for it to remain interesting to you, you shouldn't know exactly what it is you're doing. It's something that you need to discover over time, also performing the music. And I think that that has happened previously, that I've written songs that I kind of understood the meaning of later on. But in this case, obviously, it's been very heavy because it's been, this album is very much about, like you say, forgiveness, about loss, religion, death, you know, these themes are kind of like the cornerstones of the music and the
but it's also about spirituality.
Spirituality and this and seeking some form of spirituality.
And that's really funny for me because, you know, I have been always denying that part of me. I was always denying that I was as just a messenger or filter. You know, like I always everybody asks like also meeting now those religious people are like always trying to push me to ask the same question. So do you think it's you who is doing music? And it's kind of like, it is me. No, but now I'm not that sure anymore, to be honest.
One of the tracks that could be interpreted in many different ways is the title track in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm listening to it, I have the feeling that it is some kind of the circle of life.
Yeah, that's very much.
All right.
Yeah,
so
that's easy.
then let's just play in the beginning, which is an up-tempo thing, and we can talk about that afterwards.
In the beginning, we're gonna be in the beginning once again. In the beginning, we're going back to the beginning once again. In the beginning, we're getting back to the beginning and the end.
Listening to Sneum's Palace in the Lake. It's a live broadcast from Copenhagen, and we're talking about in the beginning with Kira Skov and Maria Faust. And this is a title track, or it was a title track. It's an up-tempo, very nice. There's some kind of a singing game ritual in it with the hand clapping. Are there any references to C2 way of doing things? They have this thing in choir traditions.
It's a Kira, song, so you
can. I think it was definitely, I mean, I was listening to those old folklore tunes, so I was inspired by that, those old sort of themes, again, like we spoke about earlier, like those kind of chants of the repetitiveness. And then also, like you say, like playing with the idea that of the circular thing that is also present in the text, which you just keep repeating this with minor variations, which I think is...
But
like an ever-ending potential.
So if you're looking into the text, you are the main maker of the text. How did you do when you went on your first kind of going as an explorer into a new world? Did you take a lot of notes then, or how did you work with the texts?
I don't never really take a lot of notes, but I mean I went away like I often do when I write. Then I went just to my grandmother's old summer house, and I was just by myself. And then obviously I was kind of processing whatever we had picked up traveling there, but I was also reading old Estonian myths and reading about, you know, the Estonian history, and going on YouTube, watching old film clips of people from that area. And it was like all these different things that I kind of took as inspiration. And then I just kind of had a flow. I wrote a lot of songs actually that didn't make it on the album. So it was like a long process of just...
But how was then the cooperation between the two of you? Because Maria, you told early on that when you went into the church to do the recording...
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff was not even presented for Kira, but...
Yeah, Maria made all the arrangements, like, for
Okay, but what about... So you got the text in the first place from Kira, or you
have... Yeah, and then I was crying.
No, because some of them I, like, kind of sent just demos, right, of me, like, singing and with the lyrics.
It's not...
And
the,
she also sent me some music that I wrote, too.
Because I can do texts. So so I needed to send, of course, those like MIDI files to her to make some kind of sense out of the melody lines, but you know, like, I have to say that it wasn't even about that she didn't see the tunes and arrangements before, but she and nobody knew the sound code of the album, because, you know, before I start something, it takes long time to design the sound. Just that otherwise it would be like, you know, we're two different people. It would be like, you know, too dividing. It has to be something that unites it, like to make it our sound, like together. So that's what it took, so kind of long time for me to design that. And then in the end, of course, I had 2 weeks to finish everything. So I'm always like, similar.
Was that during that process you decided that you wanted to use the four brass players, you wanted to use drums and bass and a professional Estonian choir?
We spoke about that for a while, didn't we?
One thing that I wanted to do is there is no like piano or no that tuned
chord
element.
Right?
Yeah. So chord instrument, that means like... temperated, or like a what is it called, like a tuned instrument that you're tempered, which also makes the whole sound really specific, because you don't, everything is a little bit sliding in, how to say, like, you know, that tuning is sliding in. And it was quite hard to record, actually. We didn't really know how to, should we tune our instruments or not. And so a challenge in every way.
And you did record for a very short time, or?
Yeah,
couple of days.
And what did Mark Howard do, the producer? Was he thinking of what he could do for the room when he got in, or what? How did that work? Because the room plays an essential role in your work on a mental level with the church, but also on a physical architectural level with.
Well, I mean, it was kind of composed for a very ambient room, you know, so that was kind of like always kind of in, that was in your arrangement, that it was something that had to be kind of recorded, or otherwise it would have had to be artificially added to it, because that was the sound that we were going for. So in that sense, he had everything in the room. It was just a matter of capturing it, right? So there was natural reverb from the room. And it was all kind of acoustic, obviously, instruments and voices in there. So in that sense, it was just a matter of placing the mics in the right place and capturing the actual live sound.
But we actually also recorded outside.
We also did,
it's like, and that's where now Mark's sound comes in, and Mark's whole, I mean, it wasn't about him to decide how it will sound, but it would be like more like helping us to reach that, what we want to sound like. So in a way, it was still our sound, but, you know, but, you know, outside recording, that's probably the most challenging thing in the whole world. I mean,
like, but you get like the opposite of the church, right? Because it gets extremely dry. Yeah.
What happened then afterwards? Because if you knew very precisely where you wanted to go, so you didn't use a lot of time in making overdubs or things
we
afterwards?
We did a little bit, but not a lot. I mean, we did a few overdubs in the
singing
sauna.
We had a sauna and cabin, and we did overdubs in that. It was so funny.
And what about the mixing? Did Mark Hort bring the stuff with him back home?
Actually, it ended up being Paul Corkett who mixed the album. So, yeah, he's also another fantastic engineer and producer.
But that wasn't done in Estonia.
No, that was actually done. He was touring with The Cure. So he was actually mixing it on the road with The Cure because he had his studio with him.
He got to have a very open mind and very open ears.
He's great. Yeah. I mean, I've worked with him a lot, actually, on my last records. He's been the engineer, and he's a fantastic guy. And also he's very different to Mark Howard. Yeah. There was a lot of kind of ego clashes going on in the process. So, to be frank about it, it was a little challenging at times.
We are going to hear, of course, one more song, but I would like a little introduction to it from your side. It's the one called Everything That Was and Could Have Been. And listening to the track and listening to our talks earlier on today, I have a feeling that this is a song that is very based on observations and stories told from Maria and Maria's experiences early on to you.
Yeah, I mean, this one, I think, captures kind of, well, this is definitely one of the ones that is quite striking to, like, the afterplay of everything that's happened, because of the lyrics in this song. They have such a sort of prophetic quality. But I think it plays with the imagery of religion and the churches and the beginning of things and longing for religious relief and maybe not finding it and all of those things.
But also, maybe I've been focusing too much on the very last lines where you talk about all these abandoned places,
granddad's
house,
kind
of thing. And at least those lines, those paragraphs, gives me some kind of a visual impression of what did you see.
Yeah. Well, it talks about like that sense of coming to, like we spoke about the abandoned land and coming to a place where that people have fled from, and you know, all those themes that are kind of present in throughout the lyrics are very good, kind of, as we see, distilled in this song somehow.
And it is really a region where
And it's I have to be very honest, like, it's always very challenging to do something for, like, so much meaning in the text. So how much can you put music there to not to take attention away, you know, like, it has to be, and whatever I did, it ended up like medieval dance kind of, and it has that, you know, really certain kind of, yeah, like, what you call it, like, ageless thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's ageless text. You can. It's really, really strange that how it started to work.
Let's hear it. The track is called "Everything That Was and Could Have Been" with Maria Faust and Kira Skov.
Everything that was and could have been, I'm by the foot of the hill in a dream. The desolate land deprives me of sleep in an endless loop in the track of a train, and I've been lost in a garden with the apple trees in bloom. The parables ripe and songs whose fruit on the path that leads to the chapel of doom in the garden. Head dangling from a string, twisting and turning for a disbelief and the reaching of arms and limbs. Could have been for the eggs to hatch and the birds to sing, the morning dew like tears on my chin, a crack in the skin, unite us again, and I've been lost in the garden, in the exiled memories land, an army of men stands tall. The branches caress me like a reaching of hands in the garden. The gallows sway in the wind, twisting and yearning for religious relief and the reaching.
Everything that was and could have been, one of the tracks from In the Beginning, with a text written by Kira Skov and music and arrangements by Maria Faust. And Kira and Maria are still in the studio. We are still broadcasting live and direct from the lake, and it's still Sneum's Palace. But unfortunately, it seems as if we're running out of time. We have set a 1 hour limit, but
yeah.
As it is, you know, when you are with good people, time is flying. The last thing I would like to play from the album is a track, Let the Lifting Up of My Hands, to be an evening sacrifice. And to me, it is a psalm. It is a song that could be used in a church.
Yeah.
But the original idea from Let the Lifting is a vesper. It's a child's prayer before going to sleep. I read lots of vespers before, and then I made that this could be the title, and then you made the text.
Yeah.
But no, we didn't use the original text, but you got the
inspiration.
I showed you
from an Estonian.
No, it's a Orthodox vesper, like a evening prayer.
Because it is a song that could be used by any religion. I mean, it is about the power, the force, whoever he or she is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for my funeral, I think I would pick that song.
Oh, wow. That's an honor.
Because it's pretty hard to write a song that works.
Yeah.
And I think this works. Mm-hmm. So we will just have to make a break here, but hopefully we can continue some other day, and then finish off with this track, Let the Lifting Up of My Hands Be an Evening Sacrifice, by Maria Skov and
Kira Faust.
let's blend it up.
Collaboration. Yes, like in some of the videos with you, where your faces are merging, and suddenly you do not know
which one is
Kira and which one is Maria. But anyway, thank you very much for coming, and good luck for the project. And if anybody listens to this program, being in the neighborhood of Copenhagen and Koncerthuset on the 8th of July.
Yeah.
Then you will do
a
presentation live of In the Beginning at Studio 2 at Koncerthuset. And normally it starts at 8 o'clock, so I guess it's during
with
the
Estonian choir and everything. We're flying them in.
With all the musicians?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The full lineup.
We got to be there.
Yeah.
On the 8th of July. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shall we rise?
The lifting up of my hands be an evening sacrifice. One of the beautiful tracks from this album in the beginning by Kira Skov and Maria Faust. As I mentioned early on, you can hear the full album live at Koncerthuset in Copenhagen on the 8th of July during the Copenhagen Jazz Festival. And if you want to listen to Sneum's Palace once again, this is going to be streamed again on Saturday at 10 o'clock, and later on you can have it as a podcast. But also, if you can't wait getting inside the palace at 2 o'clock tomorrow, there will be a rerun of a palace of last night about a Polish band called Moon. It's not called Moon in Polish, but I can't say it in Polish. So, but anyway, the band is going to perform at Roskilde on Thursday during the festival. So, if you want to have an introduction to one of the new, fairly unknown bands performing at Roskilde, then tune in at the lake tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And thanks a lot for being with us this day, this noon, whatever it's called. Thanks.
The Lake.
The Lake Radio.